The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caroline.
And before we go any further, this episode on women and marathons is owed to a listener, Scott Perry, in Calgary. This one's for you. Scott Perry sent us an email saying, "Hey gals, guess what? The Boston Marathon is rolling around April 16th, and it marks the 40th anniversary of women being officially allowed to run in it." And so I forwarded the email to Caroline. I said, "Hey Caroline, you know what's awesome? We have a fantastic listener named Scott who has a fantastic idea about running."
And then we talked about Scott for a while and how smart he was.
Yeah, we were going to do the podcast originally on Scott
Perry.
Yeah,
just about Scott.
But we thought that could get creepy.
Yeah, his Facebook profile was private.
So we decided to go with Boston Marathons, a broader topic. and I'll kick things off with a little marathon anecdote. While I do jog a couple times a week, if I'm being good, I try to do it at least a couple times a week, I'm not really a long distance runner. The only long distance marathon I have ever participated in was the Peachtree Road Race, which is one of the largest 10Ks mm-hmm. in the world. There's something like 55,000 participants
yeah.
who run right past our building, in fact, here in Atlanta, Georgia. And a few years ago, my then boyfriend and I decided that we wanted to run the road race. It was the 4th of July. It'd be something kind of fun to do together. There are all these people. I was a recent transplant to Atlanta. So we didn't really think about the fact that, hey, this spur of the moment idea means that we didn't have a number. And we didn't realize that we thought, like, you know, you could just sort of jump on the course. You could just run it. There were so many other people who did have numbers. Would two people without a number really make a difference? So we took MARTA, the public transit, down to the start of the race. There's swarms of people. It was at the break of dawn. It was very eerie. It was actually kind of like zombie land out here because there were just people walking around in sort of next to nothing and running gear while the sun was rising. And ran into Sarah from Stuff You Missed in History class, who of course had a number, like a proper, a proper participant. And she immediately and gently informed us that we might want to watch our backs and keep a low profile because we really should not be on the course without numbers.
Will you get thrown off?
Yeah, there are people on there watching to see if you have a number or not.
Well, is it to protect against, like, crazy people doing crazy stunts? Or is it just, like, there's already so many people there, we don't want unregistered runners?
There were already so many people there, and especially for the really serious runners that go first, there are those time trials that they have to compete in other marathons. So you don't want random folks just mucking up the race course. But the good news is, good news for me anyway, is that my boyfriend and I were able to run it anyway. And my favorite part was passing by a Catholic church where a priest was throwing out holy water on the runners. So I like dodged over and got sprinkled. And I really think that it helped me cross the finish line.
Good. And you didn't melt or anything?
I did not melt, even though I'm not Catholic. So...
Hey, anything helps when you're running that long. I'm a very loose jogger. I jog sometimes when I feel like it. I get into periods of jogging. That's about it.
I'm imagining you like running without using your arms. For some reason, that's my my image of loose jogging.
Just
flailing your shoulders around.
Well, you know, I thought it was funny that you mentioned that you and your boyfriend just like jumped in because... Well, it's not funny because that's how women had to run marathons at first.
Right.
Because they weren't allowed, like flat out, women were not allowed to register for marathons. I mean, they could run, they could do what you guys did and, you know, be unofficial participants and not have their time count or anything, but they were not welcome.
Yeah, the thing is, I was merely following in the footsteps of women like Roberta Gibb and Catherine Switzer in the Boston Marathon. And since we kicked things off talking about the Boston Marathon, we should go ahead and mention that this race has been going on since 1897, and 2012, we're only at the 40th anniversary of women being officially allowed to run. And like you hinted at earlier, Caroline, there were women who jumped into the fray secretly in the Boston Marathon. In 1966, the first known woman to do this was Roberta Gibb, who had applied to run in the Boston Marathon, but her application was rejected because women were not, according to the official rules of amateur running at the time, women were not allowed to run that far, which is a marathon, we should go ahead and say, is 26.2 miles.
Right.
Which makes me tired just thinking about it.
Yeah, I have no desire. I see people running. I have friends who just ran a half marathon. My roommate was part of that. He came home and I don't think he moved.
I think your flailing arms and shoulders would be very tired by the end of that.
They sure would.
Probably throw something out of a socket.
They would. But Gibb wasn't trying to make a statement. She wasn't trying to break down barriers. She just wanted to run. She was a 23-year-old young Navy wife, and she had watched the race in 1964 and pointed out that all she saw was people. She didn't take note of the fact that there were no women running. She just thought it was neat. She liked the type of people who participated, and so she wanted to get involved also. So in 1966, she goes to Boston and kind of hangs out on the sidelines like, oh, no, I'm just me. No, I'm just wearing shorts because it's March or April in Boston. You know, no problem. And she ended up jumping in as the runners came by.
Yeah, there's a little bit of controversy about where she actually jumped
right.
in, whether or not she ran the entire course or if she jumped in a little less conspicuous spot, more in the middle of the marathon. But nevertheless, she crossed the finish line, ended up getting a time of 3 hours, 21 minutes, 40 seconds, and finished, not too bad, 126th out of 500. But the next year, Catherine Switzer enters the race, and this is the story that has been circulating around blogs as this year as the Boston Marathon approaches, because there is photographic evidence of the race organizer, one of the organizers, Jock Semple, trying to push Switzer off the race course.
Like literally.
Literally off the, yeah, pushing her off physically. She ended up getting into the race officially by applying as KV Switzer. But she claims, she's a little sneaky about this. She claims that, oh, well, you know, I was using my initials just in day-to-day business. But she also knew that if she registered as Catherine, she would not be allowed to run.
Right, and she managed to avoid the pre-race physical, too, by saying that she'd been cleared earlier. So she had a plan.
She knew what was going on.
She knew what was going on. And if you've seen pictures at all, if you follow any news about the race or know anything about running history, there are a lot of pictures circulating now, too, of that period where this Jock Simple guy, this crotchety old Scottish man, tried to push her out of the race. And you can see where Tom Miller, Switzer's boyfriend at the time, who was a football player and a big dude, just like totally body checked him and pushed him off of his girlfriend.
Well, the photos are somewhat disturbing because what had happened was that as she was running the race, the media that was, they had media trucks that were tracking the people running, and there was word that spread that there was a woman running, and she's running along in this
with a number.
With a number.
Which is important.
With a kind of a floppy sweatsuit on. And so they start taking pictures of her, and this catches Jock Semple's attention, and some of the media people start heckling Jock Semple, saying, "Hey, look, there's a woman running in your race." And he was just incensed, specifically the fact that she had a number. And according to Switzer, he grabbed her and said, "Get the hell out of my race and give me those numbers." But like you said, her football boyfriend basically just tackled him, got him out of the way, and she kept running and crossed the finish line with a time of 4:20.
Yeah, which she admits is not the best time, but she said that she was determined to finish the race on her hands and knees if she had to, just to prove that a woman could, because she realized at that time how important this whole thing was. If she was like being physically pushed out of the race by one of its organizers, she just realized how important it was that her participation be visible.
Yeah, Sports Illustrated interviewed Jock Semple a couple of years after this incident, and he was completely unapologetic. He claimed that, you know, he was not motivated so much by getting a woman off the track, but as an unauthorized number holder, to
right.
make up a phrase.
Well, Switzer actually endured a lot of criticism for her hobby, which is running. Back in 1966, the year before the marathon, when she was training at Lynchburg College in Virginia, that, you know, after the whole Roberta Gibb thing, that had attracted the attention of the Associated Press, who ran an article. And after the article ran, Switzer got a letter saying that God will strike you dead
if she tried to run.
Yeah. Well, being a runner, because she was training with the men's team. And so this attracted all sorts of negative attention. And I just can't imagine thinking that running with men as a woman is enough to get me struck down. Smited? Smote?
You might be smote.
Struck by lightning?
I do think we should clarify that Switzer said that the negative attention at the time was not coming from the other male runners.
Right.
The guys were fine with her running alongside them and probably thought it was cool. But she said that the real negativity came from race organizers and the media and athletic associations that were clinging to this notion that running long distances was bad for women. Bad, and when I say bad, I mean physically bad. And we should talk about a little bit earlier in the history of running, and especially in the Olympics, that because of poor coaching styles, when women would run longer races, like there was a half mile in the 1932 Olympics, and a number of women who competed in it actually collapsed before they crossed the finish line because they were exerting so much energy at the outset, they were completely exhausted by the end.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and there was just this general belief that any long-distance running put too much of a strain on women and interfered with their ability to get pregnant and have children, so that it would hurt your uterus to run.
Well, and that was also connected with some female runners complaining of irregular periods. So doctors assumed that by extension, if you're running a lot, your periods are irregular, you must be damaging your uterus, and by God, you won't be able to have children.
Right. The website Run Like a Girl Film. .com. It's based on the film Run Like a Girl. That's pretty self-explanatory, right? And they have a lot of running history on their website. And in 1928, women were allowed to compete in the Olympic track and field events. But because of their exhausted condition at the end of the 800-meter final, the event was dropped until 1960. So apparently they looked so shabby at the end that people were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. How is your uterus? Do you need to sit down? Maybe we shouldn't do this.
Don't run so far. And because of that, women were certainly barred from running 26.2 miles, which is the official length of a marathon. But once Switzer competed, then in 1969, and a lot of this does happen, these barriers are being broken at the Boston Marathon. We have Cambridge native Sarah Mae Berman, who won in the women's division. But this was unofficial because women had not yet been invited.
Right. Yeah, in 1970, Berman finished with a strong time of 3 hours, 5 minutes, and 7 seconds, at which point a reporter asked, why did you do it? And at the time, she was steaming. Like, are you kidding me? I just got this incredible time, and I ran, and I did great. And your question for me is, why did I do it? And she just said that they were just so patronizing, the reporters, the observers of the race. But now her attitude has changed a little bit about why they asked that question.
Yeah, she talks a lot about how the headlines at the time would be like, housewife running. There was always this juxtaposition of some kind of stereotypically, you know, feminine occupation with what at the time was a masculine pursuit of running, even though today women comprise, I think it's 55% of competitors in road races. And then in 1972, the Boston Marathon finally officially invites women to enter, and Nina Cusick wins for the women. And this is a funny little tidbit. Catherine Switzer ends up getting third in the women's, but her trophy was broken. And when Jock Semple, the curmudgeonly Scot, presents her with this broken trophy, he said that she deserved it broken.
Yep. He said that he'd been mad at her for years.
That Jock Semple holds a grudge.
He does. And there was an article that basically, interview with him a couple years later where he basically was like, yeah, I'm mad about it. Still, he wasn't going to let it go.
Well, if you look at the photos of him when he's trying to push her off the track, there, he has a crazed look in his eye.
Yeah.
And when he's talking about that, it seems like because of that photographic evidence, perhaps the sting was a little bit sharper.
Yeah. Catherine Switzer in one interview did talk about how you could, when her boyfriend hit him, you could hear like his body being shoved aside. Like the hit was so hard. So maybe his pride was hurt in addition to his body when that happened.
So in 1972, the Boston Marathon opens up to women, but the Olympics did not open up a women's marathon until the LA Games in 1984. And they were still hung up. The IOC, the International Olympic Committee, was still hung up on that idea that running a long distance would injure women and especially their ability to have children. But several studies would emerge, especially from an Atlanta physiologist, David Martin, at Georgia State University, who found that women's long-distance running was just fine for them. And because of the way the female body stores fat, there was this notion that we might actually be better equipped for long-distance running compared to men.
Mm-hmm. And research like that was really crucial in convincing the IOC to allow women to run. I mean, I think it's interesting that this body, this governing organization, had to be really convinced that women could participate.
Well, I mean, we could spin it in a positive light and say, well, that's good that they were looking out for what at the time was maybe the best for women. If medical knowledge had not kind of figured out what was going on inside of women's bodies.
Yeah, maybe they just thought women really weren't capable of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, as training has improved, women have obviously shown that they're capable of achieving good times and marathons and not passing out.
But here is the question.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to men running, women running, will we ever catch up to the guys?
Not exactly. There's a Time magazine article from 2008 where Tim Noakes, a professor of exercise and sports science at the University of Cape Town, knocked that whole fat store theory, you know, that women have more fuel to propel them in a long distance race. He says that there is a lot to do with weight when comparing men and women, and testosterone and muscle.
Yes. If you compare male and female, just recreational runners, not people who would be competing in the Olympics, the guys are about 22 pounds heavier than the women. So if you look at rec runners, that fat store idea might hold some more sway because women are lighter and they have these longer-term energy stores, whereas men with higher muscle mass can burn calories quicker, but it's for those shorter bursts of energy. But Noakes says that the world record marathon runners of each gender are very close in weight. I mean, if you look at those runners, they are pared down. There is not a single ounce of body fat on them. And he says that if you don't match for weight, then yeah, women get the advantage. But once you match for weight, men still run about 10% faster. And it has to do with higher levels of testosterone that builds up the muscle that gets your foot off the ground as quickly as possible.
Right. So he's basically saying, you know, when you look at just a general group of runners, whether it's in a marathon or a 5K or whatever, a woman running next to a bigger man is going to be able to move that mass around faster because she's lighter. So she might get a better time, but when you have runners of about the same weight, a man and a woman, the man will propel himself faster.
Yeah, from any distance between 100 meters and 1,000 kilometers, women are consistently 9 to 11% slower than men. So chances are women are not going to catch up to men on the race, but that does not mean that women have not been getting faster times.
Right. A 2000 Duke study looked at women's increasing participation and their increasing speed, both in running and in swimming. And they point out that before the 70s, few women ran for recreation, and amateur regulations on competitive racing barred them from distances longer than 4 kilometers, which we've touched on. And they have found that as women's participation in sports, not just running, has dramatically increased over the past century, the disparities in performance have decreased because women are being trained better than they were in the past.
But nevertheless, you still see a pretty big gender gap. They point out that the women's 100-meter world record set in 1984, and this was back in the year 2000, so that might have been broken since then, but they say that it's about the same as the men's record for 100 meters set 75 years earlier. But, I mean, nevertheless, if you chart the world records of men's running versus women's running, women's times have decreased at a faster rate in the past 40 years than men's, just because our participation has increased exponentially compared to them because we were not previously allowed to run very far.
Yeah. And talking about participation, we should probably look at why people are participating and competing in these crazy races that I won't even watch because they exhaust me.
Why would you want to run 26 miles?
It's like that Brian Regan bit where he's talking about like all those Iron Man type competitions. And he's like, I'm sure you don't have to do this. I always want to say that to runners. Like, you can come inside and have a sandwich.
I can just drive you. It's on my way.
Yeah, that's going to be a short drive, like 20 minutes. A 2010 study looked at people's motivations for running their first marathons and found that there are some common reasons for men and women. And those are to finish the race in a certain time, to feel proud of myself, and to improve my health. They found that men were more likely to provide reasons to do with achievement and competition, whereas women were more likely motivated by psychological reasons, such as to improve mood.
But we should also point out that the study author did not think that you could extrapolate that data to say that men are inherently more competitive than women, but that maybe this is an opportunity for all of us to expand our goals for running, whether it be to just cross the finish line and feel great about doing it, or cross the finish line in a certain amount of time, or for me, sneak onto a course and cross the finish line without getting caught.
Right. And they do cite an author in this article that talks about the study. They cite an author who says that it doesn't really matter what your motivation is, whether it's I'm going to beat everyone and get the best time in the world, or I want to slim down and get healthy.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You should just have a reason that works for you. Mm-hmm. Like, my friend Nolan tells me this all the time. Like, when I'm complaining about how I don't run, he's like, well, you should run and get in shape and stuff. And I'm like, well, but I just want to go home and get my pajamas. And he just says that it's important just to have a reason to run. Whether it's, I want to run so that I can get good enough to be in a marathon, or I want to run to get healthy and feel better about myself.
Well, I will tell you this. If you would like a pajama-related excuse to run, anytime I run, I sleep so much better that night.
Yeah, it's true.
So it will make your pajama time
more enjoyable.
More enjoyable and more worthwhile. So that I would encourage you to run for the sake of your pajamas. And also join the legions of women who are running. Like we mentioned earlier, this is coming from runningusa.org. More women compete in road races than men do now. According to their 2011 data, in 5Ks, 10Ks, and half marathons, women made up a majority of the competitors, but still, more men do run the full marathon than women. 59% of men versus 41% women.
And I thought it was interesting. They break down the demographics of these runners, these long distance runners. Who are these people? And they looked at the women who participate. And by a long shot, these women runners are college educated. 79% have earned a college diploma as opposed to the general population, which is something like a quarter, like 27%. They tend to be affluent and they're active participants who train year round and on average bought 3.2 pairs of running shoes in the past year. And I think I've had my running shoes for about 4 years. I'm not one of these people.
But you can be, Caroline. You can be.
I guess. I just am busy. I don't have time to be running for 4 hours.
Well, hey, why don't we end this podcast with one final fun fact as to why do we call it a marathon in the first place? This was one thing that popped up in my head as we were researching this. I just wanted to know where this whole marathon and why is it 26 miles for you fact nerds out there like me. This is coming from Live Science. Marathon, the word marathon comes from a place called Marathon in Greece.
It's not a gas station.
It is not the gas station Marathon. It is a city in Greece. And the origin of the marathon relates back to the founder of the International Olympic Committee while he was planning for the first Olympics. He came up with this it was about 25 miles at the time, 25 mile run, in relation to this chapter from Greek history with the run of a soldier from a battlefield near the town of Marathon, Greece to Athens in 490 BC in order to, announce to the Athenians that the Greeks had defeated the Persians. And apparently though, the soldier delivered the message of victory. And then he died.
Well, good for him. I mean, at least he made it. I would have dropped dead way before that. He was clearly running very fast.
Yeah, a lot of the 25 entrants in that very first marathon in the very first Olympics in 1896, only 9 runners hit the finish line. And then you have the Boston Marathon that was started soon thereafter, I believe in the following year, actually, directly related to the Olympics.
Yeah.
So there's your marathon knowledge. Now, I know that we have only focused on marathon running. There's a lot more running topics that we could cover, but we figured that that would be biting off more than we could chew in one podcast.
Exactly.
So for now, let us know your thoughts on women and marathons. Oh, and by the way, I have never snuck into another race. If I run the peach tree this year, I will do it with a number. So, you know,
There we go.
It was ignorance on my part.
Race organizers of the world can rest easy.
Yeah, I don't want some racing police at my door after this podcast comes out.
Because those exist.
Yes, in my mind. Well, let us know your stories about running. MomStuff@discovery.com is the email address you can send it to. And in the meantime, we've got a couple emails here to share. This first one is from Chelsea in relation to our Richest Women in the World podcast. And at one point we made what she called a snarky little quip about John Walton's kit-built plane crash. She writes, I understand the confusion, but I wanted to clear up about kit plane and experimental aircraft. Experimental aircraft is a name that is attached to any plane that is not built in a factory. My dad has been working on a kit plane for more than half my life. The point of building a plane yourself is not to save money and cut corners, thereby producing a slipshod or subpar product. These planes are a labor of love. Some planes may be low quality, but one should not assume that all such planes are unsafe or less airworthy. I've had to explain to so many people that yes, he's building a plane, no, not a model, and yes, the kind people actually ride in. He's put an intense amount of love, craftsmanship, stubbornness, and plain old anal retention into his plane. I'm crazy proud of him and want others to know that a home-built plane is nothing to fear, especially if you know that it was made by a true engineer.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad she informed us of that.
I know.
Because I, like probably many people, had this idea of a kit that was not as safe.
I was imagining just like an inflatable plane.
Yeah. Well, that would be dangerous for sure. Okay, this email is from Anson, who is writing about our Women Pilot episode. I am writing from Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, which was recently voted as the most female-friendly airport in the world. This is the result of an initiative called Girls Fly 2, started by a helicopter pilot at Trinity Helicopters here in Yellowknife. She wanted to fly 500 young women and girls in one day. 3 weeks ago, the event took place under sunny skies, and over 400 girls between ages 7 and 22 were flown. A friend who took her 13-year-old daughter reports that her daughter was thrilled and now talks of nothing else than becoming a helicopter pilot. I grew up around aviation and am now involved in air traffic services with NAV Canada, Canada's provider of ATC and ATS. I talk to many, many female pilots on the radio. Maybe about a third of all my contacts are female, an increase since I started in this business 10 years ago. The future is very bright for women who want to become pilots, and organizations like the Royal Canadian Air Cadets, the 99s, the Canadian Owners and Pilots Association, and the Experimental Aircraft Association are working hard at getting out the message that girls can fly too.
Excellent. So, thanks to everyone who's written in. MomStuff@discovery.com is where you can send your letters. You can also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at MomStuffPodcast. And there are a ton of articles all about running at our home website. It's HowStuffWorks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.